Hello, and welcome to the 12th House Tomfoolery Podcast.
Hi, Kate. How you doing?
Hi, Tiffany. So, we're going to talk about astrology today as a little like reference point for people who are new to astrology or people who don't have a ton of base knowledge about it. So we're going to do that. But first,
awesome.
I have to tell you about my near-death experience that I had about 2 hours ago.
Man. Ready for it? What? Yeah. You didn't tell me about this. Tell me now.
It's not an actual near-death experience, but I was laughing my ass off. So you know how I told you I was going to take a shower before we did this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so I did. Totally sober. Like dead, stone cold sober. And I was like at the end of the shower, I was like shaving my legs, you know? And I like reached to grab my like face wash, which was like on the counter of the, or the, on the shelf of the shower. And I like slipped and fell, but while I slipped and fell,
ma'am, oh my Lord.
Yeah. Bam. I knocked down my shower curtain, the whole thing in the middle of the shower. I like ended up, I actually can't believe I didn't like really hurt myself. I like somehow kind of broke the fall, but like one leg was out of the shower. The shower curtain was on top of me. Like water is all over me. I'm fine. I'm not hurt. But I was like in shock for a second. And then I couldn't stop laughing because I was like, oh my God, I've fallen and I can't get up commercial because it was so slippery. Like my suds were still on the bottom of the shower. And my shower curtain was on top of me. I kept on like trying to get up and slipping and falling back again. And I literally was like, I need that. I need the clapper.
Life alert. No, it was the life alert.
Yes. I was like, I need it as a 39-year-old woman.
I've fallen and I can't get up.
I couldn't. It took me like six tries.
Times are tough.
Times are tough. And then there was water all over my bathroom because the shower curtain. It was facing my own mortality. What can I say? It really was.
I'm glad you're okay. That's horrifying,
me too.
Though.
Me too.
I mean, well, relatable.
Yeah, it was more funny than anything else. I wasn't like, I was scared when I was falling, but once I had fallen and couldn't get up, all I could think about was the life alert. I was like, oh my God, I need it. I need it. I didn't think I would need it so soon, but I need it.
You know, to know thyself, what can you do?
Yeah, right. Right. Being self-aware is so key.
It really is, though. I mean, that's not like funny, like it is.
No, it is. But I love that like you always say something that dovetails into what we're going to talk about. Being self-aware is key. That's a great intro into what we're going to talk about, which is your natal.
The sexy segue you're doing right now. Yeah, and also praising me. I mean, I can't get any happier.
Yeah. What can I say? I'm a magician. But that is a great segue to talk about the basics of a natal chart, how a natal chart works, and starting with the first house, which is the self.
Love it. Yes.
Any questions that you have? Because I know you definitely like astrology and know astrology, but are still relatively new to it as well. So anything that doesn't make sense to you, please just ask because...
Oh, I will.
Great.
I'm here to represent myself and the people.
And the collective.
We're not as, yes.
The 11th house.
Not as wise as Kate. Oh.
I'm not wise. I just have been hyper-focusing.
More knowledgeable.
On astrology for 2 years now. Okay. So let's just talk
Please
about
imbue
it.
Please us with your power.
My astrology power. Let's talk about the natal chart. I know that you've used CoStar. Have you spent much time looking at your actual, not the way CoStar does it, your actual natal chart wheel?
No, because I haven't like sought out different websites, so I haven't done that, but I'm open to suggestions. I just don't like the ones where it's like the circle and they go from point to point to point to point to point to point to point.
That
is okay. I don't even know what I'm looking at right now.
That is the natal chart wheel. That's what I'm talking about.
Okay. Well, it sucks and I hate it. And it's not like set up in a way that works with my brain.
So this is a great time to talk about this because I feel like a lot of people feel that way. And it really truly is the only way to actually, I mean, COSAR is great. Knowing your natal placements is great and is a great building block to start from. But the way astrology works is how the planets talk to each other. It's very geometrical. So the natal wheel is really imperative to like actually understanding your chart, but it's also very overwhelming, very confusing. I mean, I've obviously gone very deep down this and there's still like, it's crazy to me because looking at charts or even going over my chart, like there's still certain like angles or different aspects that I'll be like, oh, I didn't even like realize that was there in a transit, or because it's, again, it's all like geometrical angles. So it is, astrology is really confusing. It's like learning a different language.
Definitely. Yes.
I want to like help us all learn that language. So let me explain the natal wheel to you, because understanding kind of how it works is a good base to getting into the rest of the meat and potatoes of the meal. Does that work?
God, I love meat and potatoes.
I love meat and potatoes.
Team carbs.
Yeah, I like the potatoes more than I like the meat. Team carbs.
Sophie's choice.
Well, yeah, it is Sophie's choice, but I, deep in my heart, I'm a carb girl. I just am. I love them. I could give up meat easier than I could give up carbs without a second thought. Are we having a moment of silence?
I was just deeply reflecting on that. Like, wow, how do you choose? It's literally Sophie's choice.
It is.
Could not even.
Yeah. It is a two of swords moment in the tarot, for sure. It's a tough decision.
All right. You're natal charting me right now. I don't know what that means. I'm a noob.
We can get into that's not even astrology. That's the tarot. But we can get into the tarot another time. They are interconnected.
Explain it like I'm five.
Yeah. Yeah.
But start with natal since that's what we're doing today.
You can't say explain it to me like I'm five while we're talking about food, because a five-year-old's diet is like my dream diet. Mac and cheese, chicken nuggets, snacks. Oh, God, I wish I could be five again. Okay.
Well, I don't want to wait to be five again all over.
Oh, my God, I love it. Dawson's Creek. Oh, man, Dawson's Creek. Paula Cole. You're bringing back all the memories. Quick question. Sorry, of course we're going off the rails already, but.
Sorry.
Sorry. You made my brain another two of swords moment. Well, not for me. It was a very clear decision for me, but you made my brain go to Dawson's Creek. Were you a Pacey girl or a Dawson girl?
I was objectively neither. I did not care for either.
Really?
Yeah. I liked the gay brother. Even though I knew he was gay, I was like, if I had to pick his mindset, awesome.
His look,
what a cutie pie. Yeah, I could not. I found Dawson just so, I can't. Just don't fucking speak. You're so annoying. And then Casey was your classic golden retriever dipshit high school boy, like no big deal. Like we were all basic as fuck in high school. I had my fucking things, but there were a dichotomy of things I hated. So I didn't like either.
So not either. I can't speak intelligently about this because I don't remember really what either one of them did. I remember what they look like. But my heart, my soul says Pacey. I was definitely a Pacey. I mean, I'm definitely more like attracted to.
I mean, to gun child. To my head.
Gotta be Pacey.
At the time, Pacey.
Joshua Jackson.
Gun to my head. Now, maybe Vanderbeek. I don't know.
Well, if I remember correctly,
it's a 20-year difference for me.
Yeah, me too. More than 20. It's like a 24-year difference for me. But
I don't want to wait.
we're gonna be doing podcast karaoke now.
Shh, we're so sorry, but we're not.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I don't really remember, like, Pacey was more of a dick, right? If I remember. But they were also like the, I don't remember.
They were all kind of like emo, but he was more of a contrarian.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I had a thing for him. I was always Team Pacey. Dawson annoyed me too. I don't remember why, but he definitely annoyed me. Although. I
mean, Jesus, pick a reason. He was so annoying.
This is a no Dawson's Creek zone. Although, oh my God. Okay. I got to stop the tangents after this. Sorry. I was going to go on another James Vanderbeek tangent, but this one actually takes precedence. When I was in college, freshman year, there was this bar, Conrad's, that you could get into.
Is this where you were fucking drinking grasshoppers?
No, 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 no. That was, I told you, that was an actual, like, real restaurant across from the theater, like, that real people went to.
Sweet Moses.
Conrad's was a bar on Marshall Street, which is like center of campus, that, I mean, it was just, it was such a shithole. And you could, I literally got in with, like, you could get in with any sort of fake ID. Like, we took our friend's sister who was like 14 in there, and she like wrote on a piece of paper, like, I'm 21 with a stick figure, and she got in. I mean, it was a disaster. It got closed down, obviously, for underage drinking, of course. But the guy that owned it,
you don't say.
Right. So crazy. And it was so funny when that happened. People like brought like flowers to it. Like it was like a memorial for Conrad's.
I don't want to wait.
Yeah. Right. So to tie in the Dawson's Creek, though, this shithole of a bar. I mean, it was so gross in there. It was so gross. Johnny Conrad, we called him. I don't know what his actual name was. The owner of the bar, who was like a 38-year-old who owns a college bar, like a creep in retrospect.
Psychopath.
Yeah. So spent a shit ton of money on Dawson's Creek memorabilia. So
stop it.
No. So he would get on the microphone. He would get on the microphone and say, like, the downstairs bar is now open, and like people would flood downstairs. And it was awash with Dawson's Creek memorabilia. They had Joey Potter's. No, this is totally true. He had Joey Potter's mom's gravestone from the show. He like bought it on eBay. Yeah. He had like signed cast poster. I mean, it was Dawson's Creek everywhere. Everywhere. To be fair, this is, you know, my freshman year of college was 2001, 2002. So like it was culturally relevant at that time. And we lost our shit over it. But like, what a weird... What a weird little culture hub of Dawson's Creek. Like, it was so, so bizarre. So bizarre. And I wonder where...
the thesaurus.
I wonder where Joey Potter's mom's gravestone is now. Like, did he sell it after Conrad's got shut down? Might have to get on this case.
That's a good question. Time to start emailing old friends.
Yes. Yes, we'll get to the bottom of this.
Oh, is that your Bud Light apple slices?
Yeah, sure is. I'm back on the slices.
Slice? Slice. Oh, that sounds good. I'll have a slice.
Yeah, it sounds better than it is, that's for sure. The only good one, if any one of our listeners is contemplating being a masochist and getting some of these, the only good one is the OG apple slices, crisp apple.
What are we doing with the show, Kate?
We are
going to the astrology.
Yeah, we're going to stop talking about Dawson's Creek. R.I.P. So sad. And even though I really want to bring up my other James Vanderbeek tangent, but I'm not going to.
They're going to have to wait for the next episode.
Yeah, it'll come up again. Don't worry. Because it does deal with true crime. But I'm going to have a little bit of self-control and we're going to actually get into the astrology. Sound good?
Oh, yes. Let's do it.
Okay. So when you look at your natal chart, the wheel, the way that works is it is like a one-dimensional before you add the ascendant and the descendant. I'll come back to that in a second. Just where your planets are when you're born, right? So you've got your sun in Scorpio, your moon in Sagittarius, Libra. Whatever it is, Libra, where all the planets are in the sky. So people, you know, bring this up often. Well, okay, if two people are born at the exact same time and astrology is a thing, then why wouldn't they be the exact same person? Which obviously there's a lot of reasons for that.
Valid question.
It's a valid question, but like we all have different life experiences that color up all that kind of thing. But also, what animates your chart then? So like you've got the natal wheel shows where the planets are, like in the zodiac, in what constellations they're in. But that's like a one-dimensional shot. When you're born, and this is why the time of your birth is so important and the place, because even a person that's born at the exact same time as you in a different area is going to have a different ascendant, because the ascendant, when you look at the chart, it's a circle, and then you can see through it, there's a cross, looks like a sniper rifle, kind of like a cross. That is your ascendant descendant, which is the horizontal line, and then your MCIC, which is the vertical line. So your ascendant is based on where the sun was on the horizon when you were born, what constellation it's in. So it's basically like the sign that is coming to meet you as you come into the world. It's like your Walmart greeter into life. That is what brings your chart into like the 3D. It's what animates it. It's what like makes you. Let's animate those planets. And then there's something else called the vertex, anti-vertex, which is like another angle, but that's too complicated. We're not going to get into it, but that's like what kind of like stretches it out into like a five-dimensional kind of a thing.
Okay.
But your ascendant, descendant, and your MCIC, ascendant more specifically, is what sets your house rulership. So your ascendant, like mine is 8 degrees Libra. That was where the sun was on the horizon when I was born. That is what starts my first house. So my natal chart starts at 8 degrees Libra, that horizontal line. So my first house is ruled by Libra. Different houses can either be bigger or smaller depending on your distance from the equator. But the ascendant, the angles, are super, super important in your chart, because they are what sets up the entire structure for how all the energies and the planets of the zodiac interact with your particular set of what you're born into, I guess.
Right.
So
yeah.
Does that make
Alignments, maybe?
You're just think of ourselves as an actor and we're cast in a play. You're thrown into the play. And again, like another actor could have the same planets as you, but a different ascendant. The scenes are taking place in different areas. It's like, does that kind of make sense?
No, it totally makes sense. I was just trying to think of the right word to equate it to, but wasn't crushing it.
You weren't what?
I wasn't crushing it. I just didn't pick a good one.
I thought for some reason it sounded like you said like cronut. And I was like, I love cronuts. I don't know what's wrong with me. I just want to eat a donut, I guess, is the thing.
We just need a snack. It's not our fault. Do not add us.
Yeah. So house rulership there's 12 houses. And the first six houses, 1 through 6, are basically the personal houses, like how we deal with ourselves, how we deal with issues deeply personal that come up, like our relationship to self. Houses 7 through 12 are more interpersonal, how we deal with others, how we deal with the collective, how we deal with life. Make sense?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Great.
Sorry, I didn't want to talk too much if you were talking. My bad.
No. Never, no, don't apologize. I just want to make sure that like I'm not, you know, not making sense. So
I will continue to be the voice of the people.
The voice of the people. I love it. So you've got your ascendant. So your ascendant, which is not a planet, it is an angle, but it is very, very important on your chart, is one of the big three. It is like the mask we wear, how we first come off to people, how other people mm-hmm. probably perceive us. It's like the mask we wear, the costume mm-hmm. that we're putting on for our play. It's not the real us. We may identify with a lot of it because it's kind of like our coping mechanism, how we like go through our costume that we wear. And it can be hard sometimes to figure out like, is that really me? Or is that just the way I'm presenting? But it is pretty much just the way you're presenting. So that starts your first house. So we're going to go through each of the houses, what sign traditionally rules them. So I feel like this is a place where people get kind of confused because depending on your ascendant, different signs are going to be ruling each of your houses. Drag racing. Fast and furious.
Too fast.
Too furious. But on a traditional, in the zodiac, there are traditional rulers for each house and planetary rulers for each house. Those are always the rulers, and those planets always rule those houses. So that energy of those signs and those planets is always playing in the background of your natal chart. Mm-hmm. But what takes front stage is your actual rulership. Is that making sense or no?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So the first house, traditionally, what kicks off the zodiac, spring equinox, what starts the story, is Aries. That is the ruler of the first house. And the ruler of Aries, the planetary ruler of Aries, is Mars. So Mars and right. Aries rule the first house. What the first house is like, it's, we're stepping into the world, right? The world is ready to meet us. So what's our first thing that we have to have when we become a person? Self, identity. It rules our ego consciousness and our appearance. So it also dictates the way we look, the way we deal with others. And mm-hmm. it is the only house in all of the wheel that is purely about us. It is us. This is the set of tools that you're coming in with. Well, not tools. This is the role you're cast in. It doesn't have to deal with other people. It is just us. So any planets that are in the first house are usually very, very, very important to you and are very, they show up a lot in your life. They have huge impact on your life because they're in the house of self. Aries, the sign, is very much is a fire sign. It's a cardinal sign, a starter, a go-getter, very passionate, impulsive, mm-hmm. a fighter. Mars rules Aries, and Mars is our passion, our sexuality, our courage, our drive. Can be anger too, but so that all Aries and Mars are always background players in there and deal with what that house has to do with. Depending on what you have in your first house, you got to blend those energies.
Right.
So then we move into the second house, traditionally ruled by Taurus. Taurus is our first fixed earth sign. The second house deals with, so after you've got your personality, your consciousness, now what do you need? You mm-hmm. need things. You need things to have in your life. You need money. You need material things, and you need to figure out what has worth and what doesn't have worth. So the second house, ruled by Taurus, Taurus is ruled by Venus. So Venus rules the second house. Is about worth. It is about the things we have, how we make money, our relationship with money, our relationship with material things, our relationship with abundance, and what we place value on. So whatever sign you have on that, on the cusp of the second house, dictates how you deal with money, how you deal with like what you place value on. Like if you've got like Sagittarius on the second right. house, you may value travel and being free spirited much more than if you have Capricorn or even Taurus on the second house, which is much more about like material things.
Material girl.
Yeah.
In a material.
Yeah. Madonna. God, more podcast karaoke. Ugh. Also, though, it deals with when we're talking about value, how we value ourselves as well, because you're coming from the first into the second. So it has to do a lot with like self-confidence as well. What do you value in yourself? So our relationship to self and how we value that and how we value material things. Venus is there. Venus also rules Libra, which we'll get into. Venus is love, romance, compassion. It's also art, beauty. In Taurus, it's more about like the aesthetics, although Taurus is a very like loving energy too. It's very like grounded and compassionate energy. But Venus in Taurus is a little bit more about that like material side of things. It's not quite as charming as it mm-hmm. is when it's in Libra. So then we go into the third house, which is traditionally ruled by Gemini and Mercury. Mm. Gemini is our first mutable air sign. So it's the third house is about communication. Like now we've got ourselves, we've got our materials. How are we going to communicate that? How are we going to interact in the world? So it's about like early education, like when our consciousness, when our the way we view the world is started to be molded. It's about short travel. So like your neighbors, your siblings, your drive to work, if work is 10 minutes away, that's all third house stuff. And how we communicate, how we speak, how we get what we want, don't get what we want, how we interact with others. In ancient astrology, it was the house of the goddess and the natural ruler for the moon. We won't get too much into that. Sorry, I'm being such a Virgo. I want to get into the ancient shit, but let's not complicate things.
We'll do a Greek episode. It's fine. We'll save it for another time.
Ancient astrology is...
Oh, I'm here for it.
So Gemini rules that, how you're talking to people, how you're taking in information and kind of putting it back out, and day to day, not so much like routine, that's the sixth house, but just day to day interactions. Mm-hmm. And then we go into the fourth house. So that is our second angular house. The angular houses are the first, fourth, seventh, and 10th, which is when I was talking about that, the ascendant, descendant, mm-hmm. MC, those are the angles. The angular houses are extremely important in the chart. The fourth house, your IC is right there. And your IC is like your deep inner sanctuary, inner self that maybe you don't want to show other people, but it is like your true deep core inside. So the fourth house, traditionally ruled by the moon and Cancer. And the moon is...
God, I love the moon.
I do too. And the moon is one of the luminaries, not technically a planet. The luminaries are the sun and the moon. The moon is the more feminine polarity. So the more passive, but it is our deep emotions, our kind of like our unconscious, our sometimes hidden emotions, but like our deep true selves, like our unconscious, not some, our conscious self is our sun, but our unconscious self is more the moon. And Cancer is the mother archetype. Cancer is, you know, very caring, can be a little prickly sometimes, but caring, emotional, watery. So the fourth house takes into account both like our deep inner selves and like where we find sanctuary, where we find home. It deals with our early childhood, mm-hmm. our upbringing, our home, whatever that is to us. It can be a lot. It can deal with your relationship to your mother or relationship to your more motherly parent, which is not always the mom. Sometimes it's the dad. And like where we find comfort and sanctuary and it can, when you're looking at someone's chart or your own, it can tell you a lot about your own childhood too. So great. That's now we've awesome. Got our personality, our values, our communication, our home. Then we go into the fifth house. The fifth house is the pleasure house. Woohoo! Enter the fun house.
SpaghettiOs.
Yeah, it is. It is the pleasure house. It's ruled by Leo. So Leo is fixed fire. It is a very creative, outgoing, little bit egotistical sometimes, but usually in a good way. Leos have very soft hearts. And the sun also rules it. So the sun is our vitality, our ego, our more masculine, outgoing energy, our reasons for doing things, how we interact with things, our reasons for the decisions we make. And in the fifth house rules like romance, and by romance I mean like flirting, dating, courtship kind of a thing. It creativity, artistic projects, sex, but like sex in a, because sex is also in the eighth house, sex in like the more like Netflix and chill kind of a way. Mm. Like what do you like, you know, fun, flirty sex, or just like casual kind of sex. It doesn't have to be casual, but not like the deep intimate stuff. And it also, because of sex and because of the sun, also deals with children, because it's the fifth house is a very playful energy. So it can deal with your relationship with children. It is the technical house of your first child. So whatever is on the cusp of your fifth house can kind of intuit like what your first pregnancy will be like, what your first child may or may not be like, your relationship with your child, that kind of thing. But yeah, that's the fun house. Woohoo!
That's cool.
Yeah, it is cool. It's always interesting to look at like a parent's fifth house and then like compare it to their kid. Like it's really interesting. Then we go into the last of our personal, like how we are structured, how we deal with ourselves and like personal houses, the sixth house. A stark contrast to the fifth house ruled by dun 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 fucking Virgo. So
bum, bum, bum.
Yeah. So now you've had all your fun. Now you're, you know, you've done your Netflix and chill, you've played with the kids, you've been creative. We need to wrap that up. We need to add a little structure to it. We need to get serious about shit. And then, of course, fucking Virgo comes in. So the sixth house is ruled.
Fucking Virgo.
Yeah. Sixth house is ruled by Virgo and Mercury. Mercury is co-ruled by Virgo and Gemini. In Gemini, Virgo.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. In Gemini, Mercury tends to be a little more like, it can be witty in both in Virgo and Gemini, but in Gemini, it's a little bit more like duality, a little bit more like charmy, like goofy, quick thinking. In Virgo, it's more analytical, dry. Both can be very witty, but it's a little more, let's get to business in Virgo.
Let's get down to business.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
To defeat the Huns.
So the sixth house is... let's get serious about this. It is daily routine,
right.
Habit. It can deal with your day-to-day work things. It can deal with coworkers fall in there. Small pets fall in there too, because pets kind of make us have a routine. So like small animals are in there too. And health, our house of health, more of like a day-to-day health kind of a thing, but like health problems can be found in there. It's just the fun is over. Let's get back to reality. Kind of a house. It also deals with medical things a lot. So like if you've got stuff in the sixth house, you may work in healthcare. Although that's also the 12th house too. But it's just day to day stuff. Like we gotta get this situation tied up before we go into interpersonal houses. Seventh house. Yep. Again, is an angular house. So the angular house is first self, fourth family, and deep inner part. Seventh is started by your descendant, which is directly across from your ascendant. So again, my ascendant is 8 degrees Libra. My descendant is 8 degrees Aries. It's always the same degree.
Oh.
Your seventh house is, a lot of people call it the marriage house, but it deals with a lot more than marriage. It is like close one-on-one relationships. It definitely is marriage as well, like signing the contract on something, legal matters. But it also can be your relationship to like your best friend, a relationship to your boss, like a person that means a lot to you. And it also can be your relationship, like enemies can pop up in the seventh house too. So seventh house synastry is interesting because it can be good, it can be bad. But yeah, it is the house of relationship and contract. Libra and Venus, because Venus co-rules Libra and Taurus, traditionally rule that house. Libra is all about balance, like kind of keeping the peace, very charming, people pleasy, both in a good way and in a bad way. And as I said, Venus, when ruling over Libra, is a little bit more on that like charm, kind of like beauty, ease and dealing with other people kind of a thing. Whereas in Taurus, it's a little bit more grounded, earthy, a little more like, what's the word I'm thinking of? Concrete, I guess. And in Libra, it's a little bit more ethereal and a little bit like more romance-y kind of a thing.
Oh.
Like, if Libra was if Venus was like a love interest in Libra, it would show up as like Prince Charming, and in Taurus, it would show up as like Shrek, like very like grounded. Like,
we are not gonna poo-poo on Shrek. He was a good.
No, I'm not poo-pooing it on him at all. I love Taurus too, and Shrek is like hot when he becomes the thing, but Shrek is like more like. Am I making sense though? Like more
grounded. I'm always gonna unite behind Shrek.
He's the best. I love Shrek. No, I love Shrek. Yes. This is not
a Shrek slander account.
Or Shrek. No, I'm just saying like it's a little more like getting our hands dirty, Vina. Like tangible and
okay, yeah.
It's more like Prince Charming. Like you're not, you know what I mean?
No, I don't. Yeah. Okay. Sorry, bad analogy. I was like, gotta fight for Shrek.
No, I'm into it. I'm into it. I love it. I love Shrek and yes, fight for him.
Sorry.
So now we've got our contract, we've got our marriage, we've got our close relationships. Then we go into the eighth house, ruled by Scorpio.
Oh,
here we go. Eighth house. The eighth house also deals with relationship, and it's kind of like, okay, you know, the marriage, the house, the kid, all that kind of, like you got that. But what happens when you really get intimate with somebody? What happens when it's like, okay, house, picket fence, great. What goes on behind the scenes? It is a very deeply intense house. It is, as I said, ruled by Scorpio and Pluto. And Pluto is death, transformation, owning your personal power, rebirth. As is kind of, you know, Scorpio is a very watery, emotional, transformative, deep, obsessive sign as well. So eighth house can be obsessions. It can be deep intimacy with someone, not just like, hey, like deep intimacy. If you've got like eighth house synastry with somebody, it's really fucking intense. It's really intense. It deals with the occult, sex, death, and other people's money. So like an inheritance as well, because death, like money you get after someone passes away, dealing with like what happened. You signed that contract in the seventh house. Okay, well, what's going to happen in the eighth house then? Like, what if you get divorced? What's going to happen with the money? What's going to happen? Was that contract good? Let's dig in there deep. Other people's money. And then, as I said, sex is in here too, but now we're talking like sex that's like life, birth, death, like deep, intense sex, not like Netflix and chill, like, you know, let me see your soul kind of sex. It is also like hidden things, like affairs can be in there, secrets you don't necessarily want other people to know. It's just like a hidden, intense, private, bare bones kind of a thing. Deep transformations can happen there. It also does rule the occult. So like tarot falls in there.
Love it.
Magic falls in there, that kind of a thing. It's a very intense house. Very, very intense house. It's watery. It also can, it's an intuitive house. So you've got eighth house placements that can speak to strong intuition as well. So then we head into the ninth house. Ruled by Sagittarius and Jupiter. So in the ninth house, staring down the third house, which was short travel, immediate community, the ninth house is like expansion. It is long distance travel, foreign nations, spirituality, higher learning. So like your PhD would be in there, religion or spirituality, traveling to other places, incorporating other cultures. It's also very much about teaching. So you've got that communication down in the third house. Now, how are you going to put it out there? How are you going to help the collective with it? Also in the ninth house. Sagittarius is an energy that is very kind of like free, wild. It also can be a bit impulsive. All fire signs can be loud. But also like a very caring energy. Sagittarius, they do whatever they want, but they also have like big hearts. But yeah, the ninth house is like, all right, well, we've been through all these steps. Now let's take it to a higher level. Like, and also luck can fall in there too, but it's like, all right, let's ascend to the next level. Let's get the spirituality. Let's get other cultures. And then let's put it back to the collective so they can learn and benefit from it as well. So then you head into the 10th house, ruled by Capricorn, and the planetary ruler of Capricorn is Saturn. So the 10th house, our last angular house, is career and status. So now you've been through all this. What are you going to do with it? How are you going to show up in the world? How are you going to make that money that you get in the second house? What is the status that you're going to have? And career, put it like this is, you know, we're putting it out there. Saturn is like law, restriction, karma. The taskmaster, which we need to build a strong career, a strong status. And that is your MC starts that. And your MC is, again, directly opposite your IC. So it'll be the same degree in opposing signs, is what kicks off the 10th house and what kind of is like, this is what you could do well in a career. Second house
and
is
again,
like,
can you mention what MC and IC is real quick?
So the IC is the imium coelum, I think is how you pronounce it. But we talked about that is like your deep inner soul, like your deep inner, not outward facing, but like, this is who I am deeply as a person. Right. And then your MC, so that IC starts the fourth house. That's the angle that starts the fourth house. The MC directly across it is what starts your 10th house, which is what am I going to do as a, like that fourth house is deep inner. And then the 10th house is like, okay, so what am I going to do in society? What am I going to do with all of these things I've learned? So whatever sign your MC is in that starts your 10th house can speak to like what kind of a career would make you happy. How you can actually make money with it is in the second, but what you would be good at, what will like fulfill your soul, what will make you happy, what you should be doing, it is whatever sign rules your particular 10th house can give good indicators on things that would like make you happy. But Capricorn, cardinal earth is the ruler of that. And Capricorn is like, let's get to business. Let's get shit done. Let's make money. They're very dedicated. They're very good at getting things done. They're very driven, which we all need for career. And Saturn is there as the taskmaster. Like, let's do this. Let's do this. Let's do this. And then we head into the 11th house, ruled by Aquarius. Aquarius used to be co-ruled by Saturn, and Saturn is still the secondary ruler. But once they found Uranus, it is now ruled by Uranus. So the 11th house is kind of the collective. It's our friends. It's how we – it's also the house of gain. So we've done all this. Now, how are we putting it out into the collective and what are we getting back? What it's our interaction with basically like almost everyone, but it deals with your friends, social groups. It is also like the house of wish fulfillment. So we've gone through the first 10 steps. What are we going to get back from it? What is this all adding up to, right? Like what are we getting from it? Aquarius is a very communal, like Aquarians can be a little emotionally cold, not always, but they can be, but they do deeply care for the collective. They do deeply care for like social betterment, I guess. So that's kind of like the 11th house is kind of like social everything, but also gain and wish fulfillment. So what are you getting? As I said, like what's coming from those first 10 houses is what's found in the 11th house. And Uranus, which is a transpersonal planet, is the ruler of that. And Uranus is like the disruptor, sudden change. It can be also like brilliant, but very quick, like insights. It's like, it's, you know, life can change on a dime. That's Uranus. Uranus comes in to shake shit up. Like it can be for good. It can be for bad. It's Uranus and Neptune, which we're about to get into, are both like neither really benefic or malefic. They're, it's just there to do its job, which is shake shit up, disrupt. And also it's a very unique planet. So, and Aquarians are very unique and kind of quirky. And so the 11th can also be about like, what makes you unique? What makes you different? What is interesting and strange about you? That's kind of Uranus, like interesting, strange, quirky, and just like turning on a dime, like really crazy, wild shakeups, plot twists. Uranus is plot twists. Let's put it that way.
Ooh.
Sometimes ingenious ones. And technology too. Uranus rules technology. So like social media is a big part of the 11th house. And then finally, we get into the 12th house, which is...
Yes.
The 12th house is, you can find a lot of different interpretations for it, which is very 12th housian of it. It's a very mysterious, misunderstood kind of a what the fuck is going on here house. So it is definitely the collective unconscious. It is like the dark before we're born, right? Like we don't know what life is before we're born. That's the 12th house. Your first house starts where the sun is on the horizon. So the 12th house is the collective unconscious. It is also called the house of sorrow, and it can deal with sorrow. There's a lot of like sadness attached to the 12th house because it's very like empathetic house. It can like feel everything. It can be a very solitary house. It's also known as the house of self-undoing and the house of prisons and mental institutions. Yeah. And hospitals too. So that's like a really negative take on it. And I can't lie. I've got a lot of stuff in the 12th house. It is a difficult house. It is definitely a difficult house. Like, I don't think anyone's going to be like, oh, you've got planets in the 12th. That's a cakewalk. That's easy. It's not. It isn't. But I think the 12th house is, it's also the house of surrender. It's the house of like surrendering and kind of like letting the universe do its thing and service to others. It's very much about service to others through the collective. And I think with the self-undoing can be a lot about, people read that literally, and it can be sometimes like, yes, there are criminals that have lots of 12th house placements. There's a lot of mental disorders that can fall in there. So it can be undoing of self in that way, but it also can be undoing of the ego and getting in touch with our more empathetic, compassionate side, which is Pisces. Pisces rules the 12th house.
Oh.
And Pisces is, I'm actually reading a whole book about Neptune, the 12th house, and Pisces. Because it's like, awesome. Pisces is like a naive energy that's very sweet, which is also kind of the 12th house. It's like coming from the womb, coming from the cosmic stew. We don't have egos. It's like the oneness. And then when you're ripped out into it and you're made a person, it's very hard to like bring that all together. And Neptune rules the 12th house. Neptune is another one of those planets that's like kind of Switzerland. Is it malefic? Is it benefic? It very much depends on the situation and how it's aspected. So Neptune is like movies, creative art in like that kind of like art, like drawing art, movie art, acting. It is like mysticism. It's very much linked to psychic stuff because it's collective unconscious, but it also can be delusion. It can be madness. It can be trickery. So Neptune is a very watery, slippery planet that like you got to be really careful with Neptune because Neptune can be absolutely wonderful and bestow you with wonderful creative gifts and a lot of empathy and compassion and like psychic stuff.
Yeah.
But it also can like a movie, right? Like you're watching a movie. It seems really real. That's Neptune. And that's really cool.
Oh,
but it also seems like it's real and it's not. It is like a good way to sum up Neptune. So whenever Neptune is in play, you gotta use that Mercury. You gotta use a little logic because it really can go a lot of different ways. And then that brings us back to the first house. So that is the way the natal chart works. And one last little thing I will add to this. People are like, oh, like, oh, well, I don't have any planets in X, Y, and Z houses. Almost no one has a planet in every house. Almost nobody. I don't even know if it's possible to have a planet in every house. There's different styles of charts. There's like a bucket chart, a locomotive chart. There's different patterns in charts that create a different kind of life path, which we're not going to get into right now. But when you look at your natal chart wheel, the houses that don't have any planets in them are just as important. And what matters is the energy that is on the cusp of that. So like my fifth house is ruled by Aquarius. I don't have any planets in the fifth, but Aquarius is Uranus. It's like weird eccentricity, like sudden kind of erratic stuff. Weird. Fifth house, the house of like pleasure and fun. Like I'm very erratic. I'm very weird. That's what I like. I like that weird energy. And Aquarius rules my fifth house. So even though there's not any planets in there, that energy, Uranus and Aquarius, very much color that area of my life, as does every other energy on cusps of houses that don't even have planets in them. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Well, that's that. That's the natal chart. Do you have any questions about that? Did it seem pretty cohesive?
I think we covered it. Yeah.
Okay.
We did good. It was a good introductory course for me.
Good. Good. I'm glad. Well, once we post this, if anyone does have any questions, obviously.
Yes, please.
Reach out on the Facebook page, email, Instagram, whatever. But I'm happy to
always linked at the bottom of the episode.
Yay. Yeah. So if anyone has any questions, I'm happy to answer them. But hopefully that makes the astro talk with houses. This is more about houses than like the actual planets themselves, a little bit about the planets, but hopefully that makes things
less intimidating, a little more understandable.
Hopefully that makes things make sense a little bit more.
And even if it doesn't, which I'm sure it does because it did, please just hit us up and let us know. We would love to hear like how we can help you learn or how you can learn by listening to me learn, because I'm also a newbie, no big deal. Let us know. We would love to help you out.
Your teacher's pet, though. I love you.
You would give me a double decker.
Small pets, right? That's Virgo, sixth house. You're my little small pet, Tiffany.
Oh. Thank you.
You're
anyway. Very welcome. okay, let's go ahead and wrap it up. And I got to say my favorite thing. Say bye to the people, Kate.
Bye.
Bye.